Vidgen.
I'm Frieda Vidgen, the daughter of a shepherd, and was born at Chainhurst, Nowden, which is a little community of four farms, dairy farm, a reed court farm, reed place farm, and Chainhurst farm. And the reed will show the association with the river belt, where they cut the reeds for the hop pickings in those early days. I was born in 1907, the daughter of a shepherd, which meant that we all took part in the farm work. We all went and looked at the sheep and helped with the sheep shearing. In those days, they sheared the sheep with clippers, which I still use for cutting the edge of my lawn. They're the sharpest things you have in the garden. We rounded up the sheep with the old dog, and
your father was a shepherd.
Yes.
What sort of hours did he work? Did you see much of him?
No, not at all. He worked 7 days a week for 18 shillings a week when I was a child, and we went to Sunday school three times a day, or twice to Sunday school, and once in the evening with the family. And my father was always changed for Sunday dinner and changed back into his working clothes. He wore a white apron to dish up the meat pudding, which we usually had for Sunday dinner, and then went back to work to do his sheep and milk the one dairy cow for the house milk. And then we all went to chapel as a family after tea, and in the summer went for a walk round the River Tees, which is a tributary of the belt which runs through the area. And the Mill Spring was a rare picnic paddling place for us, and I went down there last Friday with my brother, which we do two or three times a year.
Was it a little farm he owned?
No, it belonged to a maiden lady, and he just managed it. It wasn't a very big farm. It's a lovely old Elizabethan house, and 1685 was carved under the banister on the stairs. And as a child, I used to sit with the maid while the lady of the house went out to visit her relatives the other side of Mardin Beach. And my father used to take me up there and bring me home again. And it was a lovely old big kitchen with bay windows and window seats and a brick floor. And, the community centred around the farmhouse. We had to go there in hop picking for stuff to put in our hair and for the lice, and diarrhoea mixture, because the hop pickers, written, lived in huts, and they had about 200 huts and about a dozen toilets, which were just three bits of tin and a tarpaulin over the front with a hole dug with a bore, a pole. And so, of course, after the first week, they never used them. And it was a bylaw, the Kent County Council, that we had this diarrhoea mixture.
Diarrhoea mixture?
Yes, to prevent diarrhoea, you see. And do you want to hear very much about hop picking? Oh, really started in February, when the string came round to each house. We had 200 weight bales of string covered in hessian with tin binding it in. And you had so many bales according to the size of the family. We were a family of four children, a mother and father, so we had seven bales. And we lived in a row of three cottages, and the end house had nine children, so they had 12 bales, and the other side had three children, so they had six bales. And the men went out to open them, and we did this stringing on whimwams, which was a pedestal with three or four arms, depending how far they made it, where you put a skein of string on and unwound it into balls for stringing in the hop garden, and this was done in February, ready to go stringing in the hop gardens with umbrella work, which was four strings to a hill, which was every root of hops, and then butcher's painting, which was wire work, and painted by a man named Mr. Butchers of Merriworth, and there are members of the family still alive in Merriworth. They're still farming. And then you had to go hop twiddling, which was training, and you put two binds up three strings and three up the fourth string in case you broke the head out of one doing this coming training. And then you did that right through. Each family had a cant, which was an acreage of hops, and you were known by a colour. A rag was tied on a hill. Again, you had the acreage according to the size of the family, and a part of the job was the woman working in the hop garden. The man got the job if the woman could work in the hop garden, you see. And the children had to go lacing in, which was pulling the four strings together at hand height and tying them into a square for the vines to grow up. And they're supposed to be at the top of the wires by Midsummer's Day. And then the women all go into the oast house. The men have cleared it out from the year's carts and dung carts and all this sort of thing. And we literally mended, patched and darned the pokes and the bin cloths that we picked the hops in. In my early days, when I was about six, from my father's records, they grew hops up poles. And I vividly remember being pulled into the hop garden in a Kentish wagon, which was a cart made by the father and handed down through the families, and it had a hessian hood which was put up like a pram, and it was on a swivel, one handle, where they pulled it. It had so two people could pull it, you know. And then about 4 o'clock in the morning, the men used to go out in the hop garden with the brimstone, and not brimstone, sulphur cart, and blow the sulphur all over the hills for the what was the disease called? I've forgotten. For the hop disease. And then my father used to go out into the hop garden after the sulphur blower had been down and pick a handful of hops, and smell them and rub them and say, well, we should be ready to pick on such and such a time. In the meantime, the London hop pickers had from January on been writing postcards to book hopper huts and bins for the coming year. And most small farms had the same families for years and years and years. And so we children in the winter evenings used to address the postcards and put hop picking will commence and leave it until my father had been in the hop garden in the morning. And then we had to get out all these, about a couple of hundred postcards, and send them off to London and book the hopping train to bring them down. In the very early days, they used to come down by road, by horse and carts, prams and pulling carts. And later on the trains were booked, and then the farm wagons used to be got out. The horses were dressed overall with caters, which is coloured coarse ribbons and brasses, and go 3 miles to Marden Station with us country children running behind them all the way up to the station. And two vans went for luggage, and a dung cart went for old people, and they had a sieve basket which is a bushel basket, a wickerwork basket that they used to pick apples in. They would throw it up in, and most of the old ladies weighed about 12, 14, 16 stone, for the porter they used to drink in London made them so stout. And the wagoner would put the basket down, put his shoulder under their bottoms and heave them up into the dung cart. And the children would sit all on top of the luggage, and then coming down Pattenden Lane, the horses would stop, and the families would undo bags and tip out two or three children. They had put children in sacks so that they shouldn't pay the fare down, and take them out when they'd got on the train. They'd put them back into the sacks and just used to load them onto the prams and pushchairs and things they'd got, and then load them into the farm wagons. And they had their huts, and we all renewed acquaintanceships with children from last year. And the morning that hop picking started, because they really came to earn the money, it isn't the holiday that it is these days. For the few farms that do pick hops now, they do come in cars. But they were in the hop garden. My father was measurer, and the measurer is in charge of the hop garden. And my father, if you had a good pair of lungs, you called all to work in the morning, all to dinner at dinner time, and pull no more binds in the afternoon. And that meant that everybody in the hop garden pulled another bind, because they wanted to get some hops in their bin to get a start in the morning. And my father, he was in the territorials, and he had a bugle. And he used to come into my bedroom, open the bedroom window, and blow this bugle for the people to start work. And if you didn't have a bugle and you hadn't a good pair of lungs, you had a yard and a quarter of piping, and tied it into a knot and blew a blast on it. And you not only set your own farm to work, but it would vibrate and go to the next farm. And you would find people coming home before the next farmer was ready, before he got his oast kiln filled, because they had heard the pipe from the next farm. You see, paying off day was a marvellous day, because they subbed during the week, and most cottage people had an extra allotment of green potatoes and dahlias to sell to the hop pickers. We told them time and again that chrysanthemums would travel better, last longer, but they loved the brilliant colours of the dahlias. And we never minded if the hens hatched pullets, as long as there was enough cockles to sell to the hop pickers. So that on the day off, they had pillowcases filled with apples. The farmer would put boxes of apples in his farm yard with one of the farm workers there to share them out, because they knew if they didn't give them apples, they would pinch them. They were real characters, these Londoners. And hens, cockles they had bought from the cottages, and they used to come to the door and say, "Open the apples and pin of the taters." And they wanted the bigger potatoes and the small apples. And we made quite a lot of money. On Sunday mornings they used to go to the pub and leave their joints of beef or the cake mixture with the farm cottages, and you could get tuppence for cooking their Sunday dinner or baking them a cake. And it was always after our own Sunday dinner, because they stayed in the pubs. In those days they were open all day in my childhood, so they used to come home about 3 or 4 o'clock and collect their joint or their meat pudding, whatever we'd boiled, cooked for them. And then the day came for paying off, when all the horses and carts came out, and we would follow them up to the station to see them off, and into the sacks the children would go again till they got on the train. And then about a fortnight afterwards, the horses and carts would come out, and all the families would get into them, and we would go the 8 miles into Maidstone to spend the hoppy money. The tally in those days was about eight bushels. If we had a good piece of hops, it was nine, but then they would go on strike because they wouldn't want to put the price down if they'd once picked the good hops before the bad hops. We all went to Maidstone to spend the hoppy money, and the Stone Street in those days was cobbled, and we got out at the Golden Boot, and there was a sight to meet your eyes, where people had come before and bought their brown button-up boots, and we had hobnail boots for school because we walked 3 miles to Marden School, and people had bought new boots, sat in the curb in the gutter and put them on and left their old ones there. So all up Gabriel's Hill were all old boots after the hop picking. And then we would go, and people in those days didn't buy a couple of towels, you bought a bale of roller towel in and made your own. A roller towel's behind the door, Turkish towel, and we always bought, and a roll of Winsiette 1 year, calico another year, flannelette another year, for pyjamas and nightdresses, and chemises and camisoles, and under petticoats and top petticoats. There was a lovely material in those days called modapalin, which was the poor person's crepe de chine. If you had an under petticoat or Winsiette and an upper petticoat and a chemise of modapalin, you really were with it in those days. And so we bought navy blue wool and black wool for knitting our black stockings, black worsted stockings, and navy blue wool for scarves and tammy shanters. The boys and girls wore tammy shanters. We went to school on cocoa stop. When you think about it, it was steaming hot, sweet cocoa made in a basin with squares of bread in it. And we ate it while Mother packed up our food. And in the winter, we had a soup kitchen at school. So we went to the chapel up the road from the school, and there were great big galvanised bars full of chopped bread, and we took our basin and filled it with bread and queued around until they dished out the soup, and if you were pretty quick you could go around a second time. I remember most of our schools, we kept special days a lot more than I think they do now. Empire Day, we had all the Commonwealth nations, we dressed up, we always chose Britannia, and she had a golden hat, Britannia's hat, and sat in a chair covered by the Union Jack, and we all sang Commonwealth songs, and we saluted the Union Jack, and we had trays of New Zealand and Canada and Australia, things depicting things from those countries. We had Primrose Day, we had Oak Apple Day, and we had May Days when we chose the May Queen. And I remember now sometimes when I give it talks, I sing the May Queen songs, you know, that we used to sing marching round the playground with baskets of flowers, scattering flowers for the Queen to walk on. We had many more special days at school.
What were Oak Apple Day and Primrose Day?
Well, Primrose was the 29th of April, when, isn't it something to do with somebody, a battle? I don't know, I've forgotten. Oak Apple Day was when we all wore an oak apple. I don't really remember what they were for. From the time I went to school until I left school when I was 11 and a half because my mother had rheumatic fever and I had to bring up the rest of the family. You see, with three brothers. I had to stand on a box to make a meat pudding when I was 11 and a half because I couldn't get my arms into the mixing bowl. And the mixing bowls in those days were the washhand basin bowls from the bedroom. If you broke a jug, you had the mixing bowl for, you had the a basin for a mixing bowl, you see. And we had to go. I probably went to school in the first school bus that ever was, because when I was about seven, they had a school horse and cart. The carrier, the Kent Education Committee, paid for a horse and cart to take the Chainhurst children up to seven to Mardin School, 3 miles to school. Otherwise we left home just after seven and walked there. And the carrier found he couldn't do his journey to Maidstone and take the children to school, so we had the coal cart. It was dreadful. My father wrote to the Kent Education Committee and said sheep wouldn't be allowed to travel as these children were allowed to travel. He delivered coal during the day and took us to school, then delivered coal and then collected us at the end of the day. And if he was late on his delivery round, sometimes it was 6 o'clock before we got home from school, because it was a big old white horse, you know, not a pony for trotting, just a heavy cart horse. And it was one of those carts like a brewer's dray with a high seat in the front. And we used to take turns sitting on this high seat, and the horse's back looked broad and you could hold the reins, and it was a terrifying experience. I screamed to be let down out of it the first time I ever went there, and I never wanted my turn again. But I was soon 7 years old and had to walk again.
Going back to the hop picking, you say you had to do all the training, and
yes,
did you used to get time off school for that?
No, you had to do it after school on Saturdays and Sundays. You had time off from Sunday school to do the hop training. You see, my mother was an invalid. She was a heart case, and we children had to do it. And my poor father, when I think about it now, the lacing in wires, when we did the stringing in the homes in February, we had to do so many hundreds according to the acreage of the hops, of a yard and a quarter lengths of string, which we tied around our waist, and we tied it on the fourth string and made the square, brought the heel in, you see, so that they could go up to hand height. Well, the farmers were so particular that the garden had to be uniform. If Mrs. Ashdown was taller than Mrs. Smith, their husbands had to go out at night and push the strings, the lacing in high, so that they were all on a level, on a parallel with each other. And the hop garden looked dreadful if they did. So we children in the Hickmott family had to do it, and my father had to go out at night and push all these lacing in strings up. He used to go with a hurricane lamp. And in those days, the horses seemed to plough. Now a tractor goes so fast over the ground, the furrow isn't very deep, but the horses ploughed slowly, and the man with his hand on the handle of the plough, I suppose it was about 15 inches deep. So clambered over the clods. The furrow was turned over, and it was so deep, and it always seemed to be hot. There was a saying, when you looked down through the hop garden and saw the haze of heat, and there was a saying that went all through the hop gardens, the first one in the hop gardens, if there was a breeze, they would stand up and loosen their clothing and shout, "Catch it, Chevis." And when you think of the clothes that we used to wear, we had a vest, a chemise, a camisole, the old-fashioned corsets, which I still wear nevertheless, and a flannelette petticoat, a calico petticoat, a serge skirt, a blouse, and then we saved all the legs of stockings from all the winter to make sleeves. They were called sleeves, so that the binds wouldn't scratch your arms. And then we always wore hats and a piece of calico round the hat to shade the back of the neck. It was pinned on the front of the shoulder to shade the back of the neck from the sun. So you don't wonder we wanted to stand up and catch the breeze as it went through the hop garden.
Did people used to plant anything in between the hops?
Oh, no. and keep it very clean. The horses were shimming up and down all the year. Shimming, yes, it was a chain implement with spikes on, and then a chain, the spikes went through the ground and uprooted the weeds, and then the chain, a mesh mat as it were, levelled the ground off where the shim had raked it up into ridges to get the weeds up.
Do people ever plant mangel wurzels or anything like that to attract the bugs and things?
No, not in between, they were in different fields. Yes.
When you were doing hop picking, did people like the teacher help and make books?
We had a bookie, usually a retired man, and quite often he was a school teacher, but usually when you got one on a farm, you kept him. Ours, the children called him Pongo, because he was such a small man, and when he came in the gate, we used to say, "Puzzle find Pongo." And you see, our bin, the Hickmott's bin, was the centre of the whole hop garden, because my father was measurer, and the measuring basket, you do it by size and not by weight, by a bushel, a mark around the head of the bushel basket, and we children used to carry the bushel basket out into the hop garden. It was turned upside down, and the Londoners used to send their children to run and jump on the bottom so that it would make the measure less if the bottom was dented in, so we had to keep moving the bushel basket up close to the bin. In those days, they were allowed a gallon of beer for the binman, because a binman, in those days they were called pole pullers, because they pulled up the poles in the hop garden with the dead man, which was a clawed instrument, U-shaped, with a wooden handle, and they would put it around the pole into the ground and lever on the wooden handle and pull the pole up and lay it across the bin and pick from the pole. That was even before the stringing came into being. So they were called pole pullers, and we still call them pole pullers. And they looked after 12 bins, which was called a set, you see, and the set had to be cleared off, your hops picked up, and your binds rolled up. The garden was tidy, and he got the heads down where you pulled a bind and it broke, and it left the best part on the wire. The best hops were on the wire. Now when they cut the binds down, you go along the roads and see all the heads hanging on the wire when they cut them down from the machine. But in those days, the hop garden was completely clean, and they were allowed a gallon of beer. Well, my father didn't drink beer. He had cider. There's his cider barrel that was out in the hop garden. We had to push it under the binds, the rolled up binds, to keep it cool so that they could come and occasionally have a drink. And the binman kept the tally. You had a bag that hung on the end of the, a dilly bag that hung on the end of the bin, and to keep your book in, which you gave to the bookie as he came to measure the hops.
Did the Londoners drink?
Oh, yes. The pub, outside the pub, was like cut final night. And the village shop, they put orange boxes with wire netting around them and left to make a grill, and left just a piece and a space underneath to push the goods through. The home dwellers, as we local people were called, went round to the back door of the house and at 4 o'clock and did our shopping, because they got all sorts of things in for the London hop pickers. They would hang up American oilcloth bags, hurricane lamps, tin kettles, oil cans, and blueprint for making aprons, coarse aprons, which were hessian, thick satin hessian aprons. And we had hopping bobbies in, policemen, two extra policemen in for these four farms, and another extra, because we all were on oil lamps in those days, and another extra oil tank at the back of the shop, and the policemen had to come round and see that they were safe and far enough away from the shop and the house. And my aunt, a very enterprising woman, lived in the cottage next door to the pub, and all the week her washing baths, which were about, I should think, 14 to 16 gallons of water, the galvanised baths were doing their washing, they all hung in the shed, but hot picking, they hung on the wall outside her house, because she knew that during my childhood the licensing hours were altered and the pubs closed at 2:30. My father used to take us down through a crocodile, all the children, through this mass of Londoners, singing, bawling, half drunk, not quite drunk, you know, all outside the public house. And there were stalls that sold kippers and bloaters and boiled sweets and second-hand clothing. And it all happened outside the Pig and Whistle. The name has been changed to the Royal Oak, which isn't nearly so romantic as the Pig and Whistle. And they used to have hardtack cakes for a halfpenny, biscuits. And we country children, home dwellers as we were called, longed to buy one of these biscuits. And we weren't allowed to. Our families didn't know what they were made of, and we weren't allowed.